Broadcasting from the financial capital of the world, this is NBRFM, New York City.
And we're back. Sal G. and Grasso hosting with you today on NBRFM. And our next guest is Tina Stromstedt. Hello, Tina. How are you today?
Hi, Sal. I'm fine. Thanks for this conversation.
Thanks for being here. Tina is the owner at Soul's Body, and I have your location is San Francisco, California. Is that right?
That's right.
Very good. And start us out, Tina, if you would, please tell us the address of your website and where folks can find you on social media, email, telephone, wherever your good contact points are for you.
Thanks so much. My phone number is 415-668-7857, and my website is tinastromstedt.com. That's TinaStromstedt.com.
And Tina has a fantastic background and resume. She does so many things. So, Tina, if you would, for the folks who are listening to the both of us for the first time, explain a little bit about your background and what you do.
Sure. I'm a Jungian analyst. Carl Jung was a psychiatrist who worked and lived in Switzerland from 1875 to 1971. And he worked a lot with the deep unconscious and had a big impact on our culture. I'll be coming back to him in a bit, but words like extroversion, introversion, inferiority complex, superiority complex, all these things, the MMPI, personality inventory, that people often take when they're hired by companies and things like that to see what a good fit might be, at least in a general kind of way. Those things come directly out of Jung's work. So I'm a Jungian analyst, which is sort of a fancy way of saying I'm a psychotherapist who works in talk therapy, including a very deep interest in the unconscious. So those are the things that come through in our dreams, in our body movement, in our way of being in the world, sometimes in the metaphors we use in our speech. So it's a way of going beyond the social personality, what he called the persona, the part of ourselves that we generally present in the world, to what it is that's residing more deeply within us, which is not only a source of healing, in other words, where the conflicts are and the questions and things from our history that we're struggling with, and also the potentials, those parts of ourselves that we haven't yet developed. So I work as a Jungian analyst, a verbal psychotherapist, a dance movement therapist with movement, and a somatic psychotherapist working with sensing in the body. The idea being that the body is always doing its best to try to communicate what we're really feeling, what we're really struggling with, what it is that wants to emerge. And our words can often lag behind, or sometimes we're in the habit of saying certain things about our identity or about the world or things that are coming from belief systems that may have been formed a long time ago that may or may not be very well examined in our current lives. But the body is struggling to try to add something to the conversation that's true for us now. So there's something called embodied alchemy that I work with, dream dancing. I'm a teacher in Marion Woodman's foundation. She's a Jungian analyst from Canada. I'm going to stop there. It might sound like a lot, but to me, they all connect underneath. There's like the deep river beneath the river, let's say. In the unconscious that comes out in different ways.
Tina,
and a lot of these include the body and creativity. So I'll stop there.
Because I want to ask you a question. I want to get into embodied alchemy, and you mentioned Marion Woodman, but I want to ask you a question. When you talk about deep unconscious, what are the most common, and I know everybody's different, but what are the most common kinds of thoughts that we have in our deep unconscious, and how do they get there? What's the tipping point that puts them in that part of the memory?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, many things. So, as I mentioned, the unconscious, you know, has different aspects to it. Jung would say that there's the personal unconscious. That's the layer that's that we have closest access to, sort of the subconscious, some people call it. And often we think of that as the realm of the psyche or the mind that includes things that we've actually experienced that we don't remember. So there are things that happened with us, through us, to us, in our personal life that for one reason or another we've forgotten. So for one thing, it's not possible to keep every piece of information and every memory on the hard drive. It's just too much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially now, we're exposed to more information through the internet than most people were. I heard 100 years ago, most people were exposed to in a single day today.
Yeah, yeah.
Than maybe in a lifetime 100 years ago.
I could believe it.
Yeah. Another thing that goes into the unconscious is trauma. So it's not just if something didn't make a big impression that we don't remember, but if something was traumatizing, in other words, it was too scary, too horrifying, too upsetting for the person to be able to stay present to it in the moment. And so it gets stored in the body below verbal memory. And working in embodied ways can help gently contact those things that have been traumatic or very painful for the person over time to help them heal. When we are not in touch with our traumas, it can really interfere with our capacity for self-confidence. You know, we're fearful in the world. We don't dare take that next step in our education or in our careers or in relationships. If it happened between you and a caretaker, someone you know, normally you would trust, but because of their own issues growing up that people tend to pass down to the next generations if they don't work on them and heal them, then it's likely you're going to have trouble with intimacy because you're not going to trust people who are close to you, even if you want to, because there's something underneath that makes you fearful.
Yeah, this like this overriding umbrella of fear that you have that affects future relationships. I think that's
right.
I'm hearing.
That's right. It could be fear. It could be anger. You might assume that your partner doesn't have your best interests in mind or is going to hurt you. It might make you kind of vigilant or reactive. You might react in anger before they really do anything. You know, it can have different emotional. You might feel a sense of disgust, you know, or shame. That's a very common one. The child is often made to feel wrong for what they're trying to express if it's upsetting to the parent, because the parent feels flooded, you know, or they weren't allowed to express their anger as a child, or even sometimes their joy, because their parent felt flooded, or the parent wasn't allowed to experience pleasure or joy. So when the child starts to express that, you know, through naturally dancing around in the kitchen or babbling or, you know, the parent might get kind of flooded and in very subtle ways or not so subtle ways tell the child to be quiet or, you know, or worse.
Tina, I'd like to ask you about something that I understand you run workshops and webinars about called Embodied Alchemy. If you'd start us out and just explaining the basis of it, what it is, and how that fits into what you do.
Thank you, sure. Well, it's a big story, and so I'll try to summarize as best I can. Alchemy was a very ancient practice that was practiced many, many hundreds of years B.C., before the Common Era or before Christ, depending on how you express that. And as far as we know, it originated in ancient Egypt, which was a very sophisticated civilization that built the pyramids and had a lot of philosophy and science and things that in some ways we don't even understand to this day, a lot of knowledge that was forgotten. And so it originated there and then traveled with Alexander the Great and other people through India, China, with the Moors, into Europe where it had its golden age in the 1600s or so. And there were a lot of books written about it. And Carl Jung, the Swiss psychiatrist and founder of depth psychology that I mentioned earlier, got very interested in it and spent the last 30 years of his life studying it. The reason being that he felt that as ancient and as cross-cultural as it was, in other words, it had retained a kind of usefulness and legitimacy throughout human history because it presented a kind of map of transformation. When we're healing and changing in a deep way, some of the phases that we tend to go through in the process of healing and transformation. So when he discovered or rediscovered alchemy and brought it back to us in the modern era, he was astonished because it helped him make more sense of the dreams that some of his patients were sharing. You know, I mentioned the pyramids earlier. Some of the people who were living in very rural environments in beautiful Switzerland, who were farming, for example, or doing other things, who really hadn't had any access to some of the ancient Egyptian art or pyramids or some of those early images in the Islamic culture or medieval Europe, would have dreams of these images. And he couldn't quite understand why that was. And then he learned over time, hearing thousands of dreams and working with all kinds of people with different backgrounds who would travel to see him, that there was, as I mentioned, a kind of deeper river underneath the personal unconscious that he called the collective unconscious. And that is the experiences of all humans of all time. And even the animal world, other species, that kind of goes into our DNA so that we can have access to things that happened long ago in our dreaming.
Is this like a group memory ability? Is that too simplistic, or is that along the path that we're going here?
Well, I think that's a wonderful way to put it, because it would be a kind of group memory of peoples who came before us, our ancestors, or people who we may not have been directly related to. Although as people are taking these ancestral tests, we're finding out that we're part this and part that and connected to people from other times and cultures that we wouldn't have dreamed of.
Right, right.
But we wouldn't have thought.
Yeah, right. So these different cultural type of influences have a place in our DNA, and what you're saying is they have a place in our deep memory, according to this alchemy that you're discussing.
That's right. So in alchemy, now alchemy was a forerunner then also of modern-day chemistry and homeopathy and herbal medicine. So it predates modern medicine. And literally, there were alchemists who were working with what we would consider to be chemistry now, with their flasks in their private studios, and they often had a helper. So let's say it was a man who was an alchemist, he would have a sorora mystica, a mystical sister, or a woman assisting him. Sometimes the alchemists were women. And what we used to believe is that they were actually trying to turn lead to gold. But what we have learned since then was it wasn't the literal gold they were trying to create, but a kind of metaphorical gold, meaning the transformation of the alchemist himself or herself. Or if we translate that to modern psychotherapy or modern healing, the alchemist was starting with, with lead or with gunk, the prima materia, in the bottom of the flask, and he was titrating the level of fire or heat underneath the flask to cook this prima materia so that it could begin to change and transform and go through a number of processes. So again, if we go back to modern psychotherapy, people often come in to therapy to work on material that's painful for them,
mm-hmm.
you know, difficult, things that we just don't know what to do with, places we've gotten stuck in our life, and we need a private, confidential, safe, sacred place to be able to talk about these things. And so we might think of that alchemically as coming in with your prima materia, the stuff that you least value.
Tina, I'm going to stop you there, and we're going to pick it up from that point. We're going to pick it up with that prima materia and take it through its path, but we do have to take a break here. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. Don't go away. We're going to have more with Tina Stromstedt coming up. She is the owner at Soul's Body, and her website is authenticmovement-bodysoul.com, and we'll review our website again, but we're going to take a break, and we'll be back, so please stay with us.
The next step to following your dreams is closer than you think. KDMA and the Actors Studio is an established, reputable talent management and services agency based on the East Coast. Actors, models, singers, voiceover artists, and live entertainers trust their careers with KDMA. Not only does KDMA advise and market talent, they provide talent with the necessary tools to be successful in today's demanding entertainment industry, offering in-house classes, coaching, photo and video services, reel and audio production, showcases, seminars, and more. KDMA makes talent development and advancement simple and affordable. For more information about talent representation and services at KDMA and the Actor Studio, visit KDMAandTheActorStudio.com. That's KDMAandTheActorStudio.com. Let KDMA take your career to the next level.
Have you been injured in an auto accident and need transportation to and from your medical appointments? KMW Transportation is located and services the Metro Detroit area. Owned and operated by Shaquana Ford, KMW Transportation Company provides reliable, affordable service guaranteed to get you to and from your destinations on time in a clean and smooth and safe manner. Do you need to get up and go? Call for your car service directly at 313-293-0234. Or by email at quantamarie2015@gmail.com. That's 313-293-0234 or quantamarie2015@gmail.com.
Broadcasting from the financial capital of the world, this is NBRFM, New York City.
And we're back, Sal Chi and Grassi with you here on NBRFM, and our guest is Tina Stromstedt, the owner at Soul's Body. And Tina, if you could, before we resume our conversation, just remind everybody about your web address, please. And Tina, before the break, was discussing a concept, embodied alchemy. And Tina, what I was getting from it was that the idea is to go to this material in your memory that's like primary to you, prima materia, I think you called it, and to try to work through that to make you feel better about things and to respond in a more positive way. Am I reading you right?
That's true. It also very much involves the body. So a lot of this material is stored in the body. And when we think of memory, we often think of the brain. And, of course, the brain is the, what can we say, a miraculous organ, an ultra-computer, much more than that,
mm-hmm.
that gets a lot of its information from the body. So, for example, if there are things that you've forgotten because they didn't make as much of an impression at the time, but they're important for you later, or because it was too painful to remember, the body remembers. And if you get a massage, for example, sometimes when the masseuse, just in a healing way, touches a part of your body, you know, with your permission, safely, sometimes those memories begin to emerge because your broken arm is stored in the arm, you know, or if you were pushed down on your shoulders, or if, you know, something happened sexually. Now, most massage therapists are not going to touch you directly there, but it may be that the patient says, let's not do my hip area. I don't feel safe there right now.
Mm-hmm.
you know, the body is remembering. Or if you're doing dance therapy, which is something I do, you might, or just even sitting in the therapy chair working verbally, you might, with support, I might say, as you talk about the challenges you're experiencing with your boss at work, for example, if you were to just let yourself pause and breathe for a moment, where in your body are you feeling that dilemma or that conflict or those emotions? And it could help the person drop out of their head and into a deeper place that's actually really struggling to try to work through what's happening. And over time, we might support those sensations in the body to begin to move into a gesture or a small movement, and over time, even larger movements that include more of the body. We might even support it with music if it's an assertive movement and it's hard for the person to be assertive.
Mm-hmm.
We might put on, you know, rhythmic music with drums or something that's very vitalizing. Or if they have a hard time accessing being patient or gentle or more of a sense of receptivity, we might really work with supporting the breath and going more slowly and putting on quieter, more relaxing music that helps that part of the nervous system begin to awaken. So if we go back to alchemy for a moment, the alchemists observed that in deep change, we went through many stages in the transformational process, and that in those cases, they were guided by the four elements, earth, air, fire, and water. We would heat up the material. So in therapy, in a way, together, we're gently raising the heat. We're gently getting closer to what it is that might be challenging for someone. And they're in charge. You never rush people. It doesn't feel safe. And then they push it down even further. But if they feel welcomed in a warm environment, so there's enough heat, the material begins to cook and change. And over time, the water element may come in. They may tear up and cry and grieve something that they haven't been able to grieve and therefore haven't been able to let go of and move on. And once they grieve, for example, they might come to a new place. Something else might begin to solidify. And then they may get a higher perspective and be able to see something of a larger picture of their life in terms of how what they experienced is meaningful in some way. So the alchemists had names for those things. You know, calcinatio is the trial by fire, or the cooking, burning away of the old artificial structures, the heating up, the cooking. We say, oh, I'm cooking something. I'm working on it. You know, solutio is the liquefying, the tears, or maybe the moistening, the washing. The moistening might be softening a rigid outer structure that's been, I've been holding on to my identity because that's all I feel I have. I'm afraid of my inner life or what is indwelling there, my dreams, that watery world of the unconscious. But then I can move toward grieving or the beginning to let go, and a new landscape, maybe in my dreams, begins to form. The ice melts. And then we have coagulatio. Something coagulates. It solidifies. Something new. And then I get a larger perspective. And it goes on from there. There's another phase later on called mortificatio. It's a sense of falling apart, or even a fear that I might be dying, as something old inside, an old way of relating, or a way of choosing old partners, or an old way of thinking of myself is dying. And sometimes people get anxious and they quit therapy because they think they're falling apart or they're dying. And if you can say, you know, I really hear you. And let's see, it's up to you always, but let's see if we can hang in there a little, because something new is likely forming underneath that we can't quite see yet, but the new little movements are starting to come through, or the new green shoots are starting to come through in the dreams, and knowing that that's part of a larger transformational process can help them hang in there and make sense and meaning of their experience.
Tina, thank you for this discussion of embodied alchemy. And, you know, we're running a little short on time. We were going to talk about Marion Woodman, but I think maybe we'll wait till next time because
yes.
I understand before we wrap up that you'd like to leave us with some poetry. Would you like to take that now?
Yes. Carl Jung said these two short things. He said many things, but one is, my soul, where are you? Do you hear me? I speak. I call you. Are you there? I have returned. I am here again. And then he went on to say, enlightenment, or becoming more your whole self, does not come from imagining figures of light, but by making the darkness conscious. Thank you.
Thank you, Tina. And again, thank you for taking the time to be with us today. Tina is the owner at Soul's Body in San Francisco, California. And Tina, one more time, if you would, please repeat your web address, social media sites, and other ways folks can contact you.
Yes, thank you. My website is Tina, T-I-N-A, Stromsted, Stromsted.com. My phone number is 415-668-7857, and I do have a Facebook page.
That's excellent. And Tina, it was great talking with you, and we look forward to speaking with you again.
Thank you. You too.
Okay. Have a great week and a great weekend.
You too.
Okay,
thanks, Sal.
And we're going to come back with more right after this.
Broadcasting from the financial capital of the world, this is NBRFM, New York City.
Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm Jason Derulo. I love that music connects to people all over the country. But unfortunately, so does something else. Childhood hunger. 15 million kids struggle with hunger right here in America. And yet, every year, billions of pounds of surplus food in the U.S. go to waste instead of going to the children in need. Feeding America is working to change this. The Feeding America Nationwide Network of Food Banks rescues this surplus of food to help provide meals to families in virtually every community in the United States, including yours. But they just can't do this alone. Join me in the fight against hunger in America. For more information on what you can do to get involved, visit feedingamerica.org. That's feedingamerica.org. Together we can solve hunger. Together, we're feeding America. A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.